Welcome.
Welcome back
to the Big Brain Conversation with your host, Marcus Holm.
Oh, well.
Arnav Bargava and Balazs Farag. Now, today, we do have an interesting topic for you.
We're not going to talk about it.
Now we do have an interesting topic for all y'all. The EU. Now what is its future? Well, as an European, I've seen too much of the growing populist issue. Now, where does this take place? Well, I say it takes place predominantly in Eastern Europe. However, we've seen this in all of Europe. Now, do you have any
comments? And Sweden as well.
Yes.
And in Italy too.
Ah, yes.
But the Italian, I'm not surprised by the Italians. Let's continue.
Ah, Mussolini, yes.
Whoa.
But you know her, isn't it Mussolini's like...
Oh, yeah. He has children, yes.
I didn't know that. I thought...
Well, now you do.
Was it him who had one
testicle? Wait,
was it him who had one testicle or was it Hitler?
It was Hitler.
We know this thing.
Because I thought he was Jewish.
Anyway.
Whatever. He was Jewish. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Was he?
No. So.
But he has a very...
No. Why is populism growing? Well, I put to you... I give forth this idea that the Europeans are not happy with the migrant issue. Now, I would care to elaborate, but personally... But the nature of the podcast, so...
But the nature of populism makes it so that the governments need to find an scapegoat.
Yes.
And it tends to be the migration crisis. For example, or the EU itself, for example... As so in the case of Hungary. But this really depends on the country itself. Because many countries just follow some of the minor economic success that these governments have taken.
Yes, so we can see that it is rooted in a need for a scapegoat, yes? And this scapegoat, as previously stated, usually is the migrant issue. Now, the problem...
If it is acting like a scapegoat, then where do you think the problem resides?
The problem resides in the lack of nuance that the populists give up, and what that in turn leads to...
Populism is natural to democracy.
Yeah, so do you think this is inherent to the nature of the political system that is in place, or do you think there's a change in sentiments?
You know what I thought about?
Well, I haven't asked the question yet, so it'd be kind of weird if you just answered it before I asked the question, so...
It's not inherent, I'd say. It's a new development.
No, it's not.
No. I'll bring forth... So, we've seen the EU's existed for more than the migrant crisis has existed, yeah? And
yes.
We've most likely seen a rise in populism right now. So, what we see is a rise in... nationalism as well as populism concurrent with the migrant issue. Now, what that tells
us...
It's
not always because of the migrant issue.
Of course, it's not always because, but we've seen this.
For some countries, it is very easy to mitigate the migrant issue. It's just by closing their borders.
Mm.
Some countries have completely closed their borders, and yet it's not always attributed to the migrant issue. In those countries, it's still a major problem of...
Of course, there is nuance in the problem, and it's not only...
For countries like Sweden, it is mostly attributed to the migrant issue, right?
Mm.
If you look at the SD party, most of the arguments are regarding migrants and immigrants who, and like, temporary stay and migrant workers. That's what they're talking about.
And that's why I argue that it is not something that's inherent in the system.
What do you mean by the system?
Well,
don't you think it's a natural thing?
Well, I think it's a natural thing, yes. But I I specifically think that it is something that has risen because of the migrants.
I think if you were to generalize this, I'd say it's as Europe itself is experiencing a major change, both through Brexit and through this migrant crisis. Anytime Europe has been a melting pot for all these cultures, and it has been such a huge, diverse place for a long time, which has experienced a lot of problems within these cultures that coexist, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'd agree with that.
Yes.
So what I'm trying to say is whenever you invoke a change in this place, there's bound to be some kind of reaction to it. And that's why you see these populist governments that are coming up right now.
Yeah. That's what I'm arguing.
But you're attributing it mainly to the migrant crisis.
No,
I think it's on a broader perspective. I think it's more just the general way
so
Europe works.
Let's conclude, okay? So what we're basically said is... populism is rising because of migration. But I would still say that populism is something that's natural to the democratic system. For example, Socrates hated democracy because he thought that these kind of populist leaders would pop up that would please people by promising short-term solutions to short-term problems. So yeah, it's a fundamental kind of flaw of democracy. But that's and because migration comes as an issue, it's a good source for it's a good source of conflict to jump into the political scheme for those populist leaders, especially that in, for example, Eastern Europe, many countries had not that much experience with democracy before 1989, for example, and so this was kind of supposed. It's much more likely that something like this would have come up, and people would have not judged it badly because they hadn't had the experience of populist leaders in the past, and they hadn't. Yeah, they didn't have this sort of. For example, if a populist leader pops up in the US, or in, I don't know, UK.
Wonder who that might be.
Yeah, there might be more backlash than there would be in Eastern Europe, because they have more experience in democracy, and they know that these kind of leaders pop up every now and then. Whereas in Hungary, they just took it and they ran with it. And so...
Why do you think that... you say that's because these countries have not experienced democracy for a long... Not like democracy for an extended period of time, like America has, for example.
Yeah.
And that's why there's... turn a blind eye towards the growth of populism because of...
It also depends because in some countries, not all populist leaders are always populist leaders. Populism also is about staying in power. So if the only way to stay in power is to be a populist, then they'll do that. And it turns out people don't care too much, or at least they didn't. When it happened.
Well, yeah, that is. I think it's a global phenomenon in general, because right now, in India as well, we have, I'd say, comparatively, a populist government that is coming on. It's sort of weird in India though, but they have the same characteristics. It's just to play on public sentiments and gather as much popularity, i.e., populism, within the. And invoke this kind of divide between the community, right?
Mm, yeah.
And I think the most recent example of that is the CAA Citizen Amendment Act that happened in India. Was passed. I was looking at today, it was the first address from the Prime Minister. And if you look at his arguments and everything, he seems very, very eager to to invoke the sense of nationalism in people. And I think, would you say that's something that is characteristic of populist governments, that they want to invoke some kind of feeling of nationalism, or what do you think their agenda is?
I mean, they're mostly emotion based.
Yeah.
Rulers or parties, and so it would make sense if that would be a tool to use, especially, yeah, because it's in, for example, back in the EU context, it's they are part of another system. So I guess we can hop into that topic soon as well. So yes, they can, by evoking nationalist sentiments, they also kind of go against the EU and the kind of collaboration or the unity of the EU. And that's another topic as well, that not many people are national, they would say that they are from Europe. Not many people believe they are European, they are either Swedish or
Yeah, that's
German.
What I'm talking about. I mean, Europe is a very multi-ethnic kind of place, and it being, like as I said, a melting pot for all these cultures, it is bound to experience some sort of divide, and people and governments are, some people are going to take advantage of that.
In the same sense as it is a melting pot, it is very much a like hegemonic culture. For example, like Hungary, for the Hungarians. And that's the inherent problem of nationalism is that, and populism, is that to unite against something.
Yes, exactly.
We've seen that in the US, where Trump unites his followers against the media. And we can see that in India and Hungary as well, for a populist government to use nationalism, they need to unite against something.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see in the EU is these nationalist and populist governments uniting against the EU as
yeah.
they see a stronger connection to their own home country
no, for example,
than they do in the EU.
Yeah, that's correct. I think
yeah.
in India as well, it's mostly sentiments that are invoked towards Muslims. And then that's what the government is, I guess, with this CAA bill that was just passed. I think that's the general consensus of what the
yeah.
uprisings in India are all about.
I mean, and also, because this is a short-term system, they need multiple enemies, or they need multiple scapegoats. So, at the beginning, for what I've seen in Hungary, it was mostly immigrants. Yes, immigrants, and then it turned out to be more about this guy called George Soros, who was a humanitarian multimillionaire person, and now it's just simply Brussels in general. So they always change, and then that's, I guess, something that's natural to the system of a populist government. But what's causing the issue, causing a problem here is that the lack of, or the diminishing of democracy in this country.
You think so?
Well, yes.
I don't think it's a sign. I think it's a natural thing. I mean, obviously, it's basically they're trying to start a fire. You need to keep adding fuel to sustain the fire. It's not going to go on for too long,
yeah.
right? So it's not like, I mean, this has happened before, right? Many a times in Europe. You'd agree to that.
Yeah.
It's not something new.
Yeah.
And I don't think it shows there's the death of democracy, I guess.
I didn't mean that. I'm just saying.
The problem is that for the Eastern Europeans, democracy hasn't lived.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been like the 10-year period or something. And I didn't say democracy is dying. I'm just saying that this populist, the rising of populist governments In some examples, we also see a less democratic system.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that democracy is failing. I'm just saying that that's a point of criticizing these governments.
Yeah, it's a point of contention. Yeah. Okay, so we want to move on to the next topic, which is the elephant in the room for EU, which is Brexit.
Yes.
So, wants to give a...
Yeah, I see that. Of course, it's not an extreme example of what we've just talked about, but we can see many similarities between our the previous discussion and what we see right now. Now, what we see is that there's a Tory lead, and quite substantial, for the Conservatives. And now, of course, the Conservatives aren't directly connected to nationalism. However, they do, to some extent, represent that feeling. Now, we've also seen the UK trying to isolate themselves, and now successfully doing so via Brexit.
Why do you think Brexit is such a popular movement?
Well, it's a popular movement because it feeds directly into what we've just talked about.
Yeah.
So if there's an us and them with the UK and the EU, the best way for the UK...
No, that's from a rhetoric standpoint, but from an actual... If you just look at it objectively, why do you think the UK wants to leave?
Well, we can see that there's a large part of the population that grows discontent with the EU. But also, as previously stated, the Conservative lead shows a rise in anti-globalism.
I don't think UK was ever part of the Europe thing.
Well, of course, they have throughout history tried to distance themselves from mainland Europe, Central Europe. However, they've still been in the
They have
EU.
Been an independent...
Yeah.
They've been doing their own thing, divide and conquer and everything, you know?
The
so
Britain
it's not
also,
like they've always been part of like the European feeling kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, the thing is, Britain also has this illusion of themselves being an island in the middle of like the ocean between Europe and America, but really, they are like a couple of kilometers from France. So that's... something to talk about because yes,
geographically isolated
yes.
helped the UK trying to feel more isolated. However, we can see that it's not all of England's.
I think it's discontent also from a financial standpoint as well. I mean, the biggest thing they talked about, and if you look at their parliamentary debates, it's the trade regulations.
Yeah, that's like the one big argument they had.
Right,
but,
so
yeah.
That's the biggest thing that they talk about is that they are not, they have a huge access to the EU free market, but it's not like they are always like.
They don't take.
No, and there's a lot of taxes and everything that's involved with this.
Yeah.
That was one of the reasons why a lot of leavers voted yes for Brexit.
But then when we look at the UK economy, you can see that like their largest export are services. They don't do goods to the same extent that they did, and it's like a minor part of their whole.
Yeah, and what you can foresee is that obviously now that if they're going to leave now, right? And since they're going to leave, they need to find some third-party trade partners. And I think as a result, we can see that cooperation between the United States and India and countries that have been fairly reliant on the UK for their exports, the relationships are going to increase, right? The UK has been somewhat dependent on EU for the access to the free market and everything, and as well as labor. If you look at academia, a lot of the teachers and a lot of the tutors for universities are come from European countries, and I think. Just one second. I think I need to find the.
Yes, what they stand to gain in financials. they kind of make up for in their loss of,
mm-hmm.
well, let's say, brain power and access to labor. Because the UK is undoubtedly a multicultural country that draws from the EU, not only financially, but also in human resources.
I mean, they've been multicultural since, like, the 17th century, basically.
Yeah, and which is why I personally don't agree with their decision to leave.
I guess they had the view that... that if they would enter,
I think they have to just entertain publics, like the public sentiment. If I mean, this time it wasn't that big of a majority as last time.
I mean, it's basically popular.
It's 52-48, or like that. Does that add up? Yeah, it does add up.
Mm.
It was 52-48.
Mm.
Was it as big as last time?
It wasn't rather large last time as well.
It was.
Mm.
It wasn't.
Well, yes.
And still, there is a majority that don't want to partake.
No, it was 52 and 48 in 2016. And I think this year it was... I think they had some...
Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess their thought is that if they would enter EU now, in contrast to when they entered the EU, it would be something called trade creation, and now that they would enter EU, they thought it would be trade diversion.
Would you care to elaborate?
Yes. Trade diversion occurs.
You know, every time you say that, a little bead of sweat just rolls down my my forehead.
Trade diversion occurs when the entry of a country into a customs union leads to the production of a good or service, transforming from a low-cost producer to a high-cost producer. This is a disadvantage of greater economic integration, meaning basically they think that it would cost them less to produce products if they weren't in the EU.
Yeah, and... this year, right? So there was a huge lead for leavers. But from just a trade and financial standpoint, the UK loses preferential access to the huge EU market that it now possesses. But it will also no longer be party to EU's trade deals with other nations, which will have to be revised or renegotiated. And pro-Brexit economists argue that once out of the single market, the EU will be able to sign many other trade agreements. So what the argument is for leavers is that this presents an opportunity for growth and renegotiations with countries like China, Japan, and India, as well as US, right? They have they've been talking about the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. And I think Donald Trump actually said that whether it's a soft or hard Brexit, they'll still be supporting
the UK.
So there is, I guess there is some silver lining, but it's very...
I mean, they ruin what they already have to renegotiate without leverage, is how I see it.
Yeah, they're just finding, they're just finding something to hold on to, I guess.
Mm.
Yes, back to Balanche.
To me, I guess so one of the points was the regulations, trade regulations of the EU that they were not happy about, and then the second point was just fueling the xenophobia against the migration crisis, And if we want to, we can dive into another topic in terms of, like, Janusz Varoufakis.
But, yeah, but this is a concrete effect of populism.
Hmm? Oh, what do you mean?
So we've been throughout this podcast, we've been talking about what populism and nationalism is, how it arises, and now we also have the concrete effects of what it does.
Yeah.
And now what we can see is that for the most part, in a global world.
I mean, it doesn't have to be that way. Brexit was basically just throwing a dart into the darkness.
Exactly.
So, like, it doesn't have to be this, like...
It isn't a concrete effect, but it is something that we can grab onto, yes?
Yeah, but it's... No, but this situation is basically a result of indecisiveness. Don't you think?
Yes, but...
But it's different from, like...
That arose from the growth of populism.
No, but this issue has been prevalent since 2016.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Why... Obviously... The major reason why this nothing has happened yet is because of indecisiveness. You can't... The sentiment for leaving Brexit might be because of populism,
mm-hmm.
but how it was handled and how the results we see now is because of the indecisiveness of the UK.
But of course, but that's not what I'm arguing. That it didn't happen. It wouldn't have happened in the first place.
Right, yeah.
And that, of course, there's an indecisiveness, but I think that's just... Partly because of UK sentiments not fully being accepting of this
equipped
idea.
To like
and, or even,
undertake
yeah.
such a big step
mm.
by itself.
Exactly. And what I'm saying just is that this is one of the concrete effects that we can see.
Yeah. And
mm-hmm.
the country right now itself is already stagnating, and it's all and people and economists stipulate that
in a world where we can evolve our market endlessly, this is obviously something
and they say that it's a GDP loss of 1.2 to 4.5% for the UK per annum.
Yep.
That's crazy.
And the thing is
and that's a long-term effect.
We might not see a hard. Was it a hard? It's not a
hard
Brexit. Yeah, it might be a hard Brexit.
They haven't stressed.
They haven't
but,
done anything.
They haven't done anything.
Yeah, but
at the same stage they were at 2016.
Yeah.
Mm, but even if it, additionally to the hard Brexit, possible hard Brexit, there's also probably a backlash from European states because it's not that good for the EU that they left. And so, I would guess that the trade relationships would worsen with European states, which also doesn't benefit them.
Yeah, and as you said, I think the mentality of populism, kind of sped the things up, you know?
Yeah.
Because if it were to happen, it could have happened gradually, right? It could have been a gradual shift.
It acts like a catalyst for this.
Yeah, it acts like a catalyst because it started, if it was going to happen, and it was going to happen gradually, then you would see that Britain was going to distance itself slowly and slowly from the EU and decrease its reliance on the EU for like trade. So, for example, now, at this stage, they would expect to see a 17 to 8% decrease in exports after a soft or hard Brexit. So,
yeah.
It could have been, like, better, right?
Well, it's not too hard to imagine a better Brexit.
Yeah.
In this climate, at least.
All right. No, I think we should end it right now.
I mean, we could possibly talk about the migrant crisis more extensively, but... Other podcasts?
Yeah, that is a topic for another time.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to this.
Thanks very much, dear listeners. You have been listening to The Big Brain Conversation.
Please subscribe to our channel and give us endless support. We definitely... Bill Gates, if you're deciding on sponsoring us, I'll link my number in the video and just hit us up.
Yeah, anytime.
How about that?
How about that, yeah.
Great. We'll